You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans, and welcome to an emergency edition of Bison Report Radio. I am your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow, coming to you late on a Sunday evening with a drink in my hand. Probably getting to you good folks early on a Monday morning, but we could not just do a Thursday night recap and talk to you about Murray State on Friday and just sort of sprinkle in a little bit about NDSU's 13-9 victory. The marker is back, and joining me, number 3 in your program, but number 1 in your hearts and mine, Trevor Gebhardt. Geb, how are we doing, brother?
Well, I don't think we could have asked for a better weekend, Ross. All is right in the world and all smiles down south, I'll tell you that.
I know. Horns up, bunnies down. Did the Vikings win?
They did not.
did Green Bay win?
I was going to say, I know where you're going with this. They did.
What a weekend for the boys. We ran a clean slate, except maybe the boys in Grand Forks. But I think
even James Madison lost. Although I will say this, now that they're FBS, I do kind of root for them in a weird way, because I kind of live vicariously through them.
And our friends in Manhattan, Kansas, went out to Morgantown, West Virginia,
and Mott.
Oh, they laid it down.
They mopped.
The fighting Chris Kleiman's, they laid it down. Setting up Kansas State versus KU next week. I'm going to be locked into that. You might be in Murray State, which would be fun.
Yeah. We're working on the logistics piece right now. So we'll see what we can make happen. Might be making the road trip with my dad. Just need to line up a couple of lodging locations with some friends here and there, and we'll see what we can make happen.
Yeah, we'll see what bodies are available. That was a common theme for Coach P and for just the staff after that game. You know, Oscar Benson goes down, Cole Payton goes down, Sam Young goes down. I mean, they're getting a little thin at some spots, certainly. But that's the sad notes. We're not going to hit the sad notes right away. The Rock is back, and not the Dwayne, the Rock that has been in South Dakota for 4 years and has moved its way back up to Fargo. I'm going to start this thing off by, I don't know that I necessarily need to issue an apology, because I think that's maybe, a little bit extreme, but I'm ready to say I was wrong. And I was wrong in that, I don't know. I'm not going to lump you in with me, but
I was going to say there's a part where I was wrong, and I was going to bring this up, but go with your part.
Whomever, I'm going to just speak for myself, wanted Tyler Roll to be the next head coach of the North Dakota State University Bison. And I'm not saying that Tyler would have lost this game. I'm not saying Tyler would not also be 7-1. This is 0% an anti-Tyler Roll discussion whatsoever. Tim Polasek is the man for the job, period.
This proved it for sure. I was going to talk about that too, so I'm glad you brought that up.
But. Yeah, I mean, he is the man for the job. You can see it in the way that his players fight for him. You can see it the way that he speaks at press conferences. But here's the difference. And look, I know last year was not all Matt Entz's fault, and not all Matt Larson's fault either, from a
attendance standpoint. The home schedule got a raw roll of the dice. That was not very great. It just wasn't UND on the road, SDSU on the road. It didn't work. To sell out consecutive games after an extremely strong homecoming crowd as well. And I got to tell you, Trev, yesterday, and I'm sure it looked this way on TV, Bison football is back. That crowd, those green towels, the new entrance, standing room only, it just, people were on their feet. People were loud. That felt like 2012, and I haven't felt like that just in an extremely, extremely, extremely long time.
Yeah, I mean, you could get the feel of it on television. I knew it wasn't going to do it justice. Just obviously haven't experienced the, you know, the early 2010s part of it. When you go back and watch games, you can tell that the TV tape just doesn't do it justice what it was like being live. But anything I saw either on social media or text messages that I received or questions that I even asked folks that were in attendance, what it was like, that was a consensus. And everyone would throw out their different year, but it was all within that same time frame of, you know, kind of those golden years where it was new and it was fresh and it was fun. And that's exciting because that's been missing for quite a while. And just to see that type of juice back and that type of atmosphere and come out with a W just makes it that much more fun. So
somehow here we are. Cool. Somehow here we are 9 national championships later playing the Jacks for the 20th time. And it's new and fresh and exciting.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's pretty
remarkable. There's one guy that could have done it. And it's, I'm not trying to kick the ass of the head coach. I'm not. But I felt like we kind of had to recognize how unbelievably well the first 10 months of his tenure have gone. I mean, he is nailing it. And
he has in every aspect. I mean, every aspect you can think of, he has. You know, kind of getting back to Coach P, it was like the way I thought of it, especially after the game, is that, okay, him being able to get this victory with the guys that he is missing, not only from this season, but even from the beginning of the season, Cole Wisniewski, Hunter Brosio. I mean, you're talking 2 All-American kids that would have had an impact in this game for sure. And you come out and beat a team that hasn't lost an FCS game in 2 years. It is hard to say if Tyler would have been able to do the exact same thing. I think he would have been able to do it eventually. He's a phenomenal football coach. But I think with him just being in the program where it was at currently, I think it might have taken a longer timeline than what Coach P has done in, you know, being from when the season started to now, what, just a couple of months. Obviously, he's had time to get, you know, his systems and his staff and everything in place like that, but from a season perspective, you know, August, late August, September, October, 2 months, he goes and pulls this off.
Yeah.
It's just tremendous. It makes me so proud. It doesn't shock me at all, but it just makes you so proud to see that live and executed. And I'm going to get to, before we get too off track and I forget where I was wrong. And this blew my mind. In the preview pod, I said the team that has less than 150 yards rushing will lose the game. I'm looking at the team stats right now. Rushing net. South Dakota State, 215. 215. North Dakota State, 112. I was wrong.
I tell you what. This has been enough of we were wrong.
We're going to get to where we've been right.
I was going to say the mother of my children would tell you how much I don't enjoy admitting I was wrong. Let me tell you where, and I guess this is, we're going to immediately get mean. I gave people a hard time because I thought they gave the Walter Payton Award winner to the second best player, or the second best quarterback in the Valley last year, and the second best player on his own offense. brother, after last night, I'm going to tell you that about six guys better than Gronowski on that offense for the last 2 years.
Yeah, and again, hindsight's always going to be 20-20. It is. You know, the quarterback gets way more credit than they deserve at, in any level and any capacity. And they also get the blame more than when anyone should. And I do think last night very much indicated what you're talking about. I mean, Cam showed why he's Cam and why we've been on Team Cam for the last 3 years.
Yep.
Mark had an opportunity to showcase why he was like a Walter Payton Award type player. Can't take the award away from him. It's his. It's etched in history. But I do think it highlighted just how good. It's not an anti-Mark pod. He's still a phenomenal player. He's still a winner. It just showed how good his weapons he had were in 2023.
Agreed. All right. One other thing I want to say too, and I asked, you know, because folks wanted to talk about the crowd and the green towels and just the atmosphere. Atmosphere is a big thing. And I asked Coach, I think the BFPA put out his answer to my question. I'm not saying it because it was my question, but the BFPA put out his answer to my question, which was something along the lines of, maybe it was an antism, maybe it was a climbing thing, but recruiting is the lifeblood of this program, which I have no problem with that. I mean, you got to get guys right. And he said, we will never say that recruiting is the lifeblood of this program. The former players are the lifeblood of this program. It was great to see Trey Lance. Got to talk to him for just like 20 seconds. Trey's doing great, but man alive, Josh Babich was there. Hunter Lipke was there. I saw Mikey Brown. Mikey Brown's daughter brought the ball to the referee. That was such a cool thing. I think he told her to do the bunny rabbit down thing. He told me he was working on that earlier in the day. Yeah. Freaking love Mikey. Mikey's a Larimore boy. I'm from Northwood. Region 2, I think we used to be like District 8, but I can't remember. But yeah, Mikey's a polar bear, which is not to be confused with Lemoore, where Quinn is from, though Zach would tell you, of course, that Quinn is also from Larimore. But just, you know, I saw, goodness gracious, I saw Jalen Bussey, saw Phoenix Sproles. Those guys that didn't even finish at NDSU that were at that game, and then 16 NFL scouts that I was able to count, or NFL personnel people at that game as well. I think they're probably looking at old number 74, but just that many NFL people. I tell you what, they had a bunch of recruits there too. Boy, I'd have a hard time saying no to NDSU after that. After that game, that atmosphere, and then just it was, and I'm not saying necessarily that none of the scouts were looking at anybody from South Dakota State. What I will say is that during the warm-ups portion of the game, every single 201, every single scout stayed down on NDSU's side when they were warming up. Not one scout ventured over to South Dakota State's side. So if you're a recruit in that north end zone, which is where they line up the recruits, and you're looking at 16 NFL teams writing in their notebooks as the Bison warm up, and you're looking at Trey Lance dapping up guys he used to play with, and you're looking at Hunter Lipke, and they don't even have to be leaguers. Colton Eagle was down there. I mean, guys that were like all Americans, that's still cool. Because you're not in the league, it doesn't mean that your accomplishments weren't great. And I mean, my God in heaven, the way that you could sell NDSU as a program, even before the ball was kicked off, was incredible.
Well, I mean, it's a championship environment. That's what the game last night was. It was championship level playoff football. And that was the one thing I took away, and I had even tweeted about it saying, you know, put these teams in opposite brackets because that's a matchup FCS deserves in Frisco. You're there being recruited by a school. You're seeing the things that you mentioned, and you get an experience that very few places, even in a higher level of football at FBS, can offer. And that's because of the people involved. Not just the players, not just the coaches, but the community around it. It's a big deal there. And that was one thing that inspired me to go north, to put it bluntly. Every time I was in Fargo for a visit, you could tell it mattered. And I think the way the fans, the community, and anyone involved with that game in any capacity showed up. Like, another good example, like when I sent the group chat that the green lights were on a towel. I had no idea that that was on a towel. I thought it was everyone's phones, like they'd been doing forever. I thought that was tremendous. Yeah,
it was crazy.
It's such a, like, that's such a small thing that doesn't, like, matter really, but it matters.
So
it's so cool.
It was so cool. We got stuck down there, but extremely personal story, not relevant to anybody but like me and intern Blake. So, you know where the entrance thing is, right? Like where the team comes in, what corner that is.
Yeah.
You know that there's two bathrooms and a water fountain there, right?
Right. When you turn, yeah. When you're walking out and you take a right, yeah.
So like, I was talking to Babich in the end zone, and the crew chiefs came out, and I had my back to the players, and this is for warmups. So the tight ends came out, and I'm facing the field. He's facing the tunnel. So Babich like moves me because the tight ends are coming out for warmups, and I get just battered around like a pinball because these dudes are running out, and like Babich just threw me to the wolves but I had my backpack on. So I'm like, all right, screw this. I couldn't even get skinny. I couldn't even get out of the way. I just about got trucked. And so I grabbed my backpack. I grabbed my backpack and I set my backpack down by the water fountains because that's like, we go through there and we time it. So they're not like just to run out or they're not doing the Thunderstruck countdown or whatever. But I set my backpack down. And if you've been on the field, there are 50, 55, 60, 70 unattended backpacks down in that area. It's people's cameras. It's people's computers. It's the cheer team and water bottles and whatever like the cheerleaders have. There are a billion unattended bags down there. Fargo Dome security snatched my bag.
No way.
My heart dropped into my stomach. I had no idea where it was. I had to send Blake the intern up. So I ended up like sardined in, and I had to watch the first 3 minutes from the field while somebody like went and I was like, yo, there was a bag right here. And he goes, yeah, it was left unattended. I'm like, bro, they're all unattended. All of these bags are unattended.
They really are.
And I pointed at him. I'm like, dog, I can see 13 bags and I'm not moving. 1, 2, 3. And he's like, well, but their bags aren't by the water fountain. And I'm like, then you need to put a sign by the water fountain that says, don't put your bag here. Oh, anyway, I'm going to get just riled up. So I spent the first 5-6 minutes of the game on the field because I didn't have a bag, which meant I didn't have a computer. I didn't have a whole bunch of stuff that I need to run Bison Report during the game. So
that is hilarious.
Anyway, that was fun. But that was actually a really cool thing to get to experience from field level, was kind of that kickoff and just sort of the energy in that building. Onto the football side, offensively, I think of course is where you're going to talk about sort of anything negative, anything that, you know, was a struggle, huge edge pressure, tons of cover zero, tons of in their face. And, you know, Polisek said at the end of the game or at the press conference, you know, Cam was begging for the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him, and I didn't want to piss him off because he just won, but like I asked the question, I said, did you wait too long to give Cam the ball? Because you look at 32 rushes for 123 yards or whatever it was, 32 for 122. It wasn't anything impressive, especially not on a per carry basis.
Mm-hmm.
And he said maybe a series, maybe two, that they waited. What did you think about the offensive game plan? I know going into the week, they were really excited about their potential ability to run the ball. Really excited about Marty Brown's potential role in this game. And like Polisek said, pretty good first down efficiency. Running the ball on second, third, fourth down was trash. And he's right. I mean, if you break it down, he's absolutely correct.
I think that's more of an execution thing than game planning, because I don't necessarily dislike that as a game plan, because in this game in particular – whoever outrushes the other team wins the game. That's just historically. Now, it's not a one-size-fits-all statement. There's going to be exceptions to every rule. as was we already alluded to in the beginning of this pod, where I admitted I was wrong about the 150 rushing yards deal. So I think trying to establish that early isn't necessarily a bad idea. Now, you got to shake things up a bit within there when you got a guy like Seven who has dang near 80% completion percentage and is the best player in FCS football right now. You got to go let him make plays. And sometimes you just got to cut the cord loose and just say, hey, you know what? It's a big time game, big time atmosphere. Those players are going to go make the big time plays. And so probably was a little bit too late, in my opinion. It is what it is. It's really neither here nor there. You just got to find a way to win this game when it's, you know, good on good. in a Goliath versus Goliath type game. But I don't necessarily have a problem with what they were trying to accomplish and get a lot of guys involved, see who's getting the hot hand, and make sure that you're the one getting the push up front, because if you can wear the other team out as early as possible, then you're going to be better off in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily in disagreement with all that. I just thought if their goal or their plan on second down was to bring two off the edge, go cover zero, offer no help, like you can RPO that to death. You can take a shot or two. I just thought kind of running power. We're not running power when that guy's screaming off the backside. Like best case scenario is 2 yards. It's so hard to get the guard
against a team that tackles well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like it's so hard to get the guard pulled through the hole, the fullback through the hole, the back through the hole. And same kind of thing, honestly, with zone read, because you bring two off the edge, the quarterback's not going to keep because they're going to get drilled. You know what I mean? They can't keep if there's a blitzer off the weak side, because the blitzer's job is the QB. So it's give, 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 and there's no
– Well, we saw that early in the game. I can't remember who right. It was a tremendous tackle. Yeah, I think it was like a third and short, maybe fourth down territory type field position. And it was out of the gun. That's exactly what happened.
So NDSU goes down, strikes first. Raja, really impressive, just seasoned by Raja. The groin situation that he's working with, as he said, like, I shouldn't even be playing right now. His participation, you know, they're more than likely, I would guess you will not see Raja Nelson against Murray State. More than likely going to be preserving a redshirt here. I don't know that that necessarily means he'll be back, but I think more than likely they're going to be having him play four games and then try and get him as much out of him in the playoffs as they can. Pretty right. clear he's a special football player. Pretty clear he helps you win. And just goes down and gets that. Then I call that a trick play online. That's probably not correct. More of a gimmick play. Anytime you've got two QBs on the field, at the very least, it's a gimmick play. Like, we don't need to call it a trick play, but anytime you've got two QBs on the field,
it's a wrench. It's a wrench of your base. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know, Gronowski's sitting in the wing clapping like he's going to get the ball. And I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying I shouldn't have called it a trick play. Should have called it a gimmick play, whatever. But you mentioned this. You mentioned them getting into Delta with Gronowski and mm-hmm. Mason. And then just that entire thing. I'll go over it and film tomorrow. It could not be funnier in the sense that, so Mason splits it, and then Gronowski doesn't get out of the way, which I tell you what, the first one, if any Jackrabbit fan has a problem with the first hit from Heisman, get out of
here. Yeah, it's clean. There's no – he made himself a blocker unavailable.
100%.
It's done.
And guess what? I don't think he affected the play. If he runs to the sideline and goes and stands next to Jimmy, it's still a touchdown.
So
for him to try and like wall off a 285-pound defensive tackle and get just yeeted was his own fault. Now, I will also stand up for the South Dakota State offensive lineman, because the second toss when he launched Gronowski for the second time, Mason was 8 yards deep in the end zone. I mean, the play
you
was
can't
over.
Do that. Yeah, you can't do that.
Over. So, I mean,
and I have I'll just be blunt too. I haven't seen anything as far as like the first hit from anyone trying to like dispel that. So if you've seen it, you can correct me, but I haven't seen that about the first one,
dude.
But if we can find it, yeah, they need to just like calm down. But yeah, any player that is running to the end zone to be with their teammate and they're 8 yards deep, yeah, it's the play's done. So, but what transpired after that in the videos is it is pretty
funny. And then the obviously the funniest thing, of course, is Mason trying to hit the Costco guy's celebration, which you're apparently too old to even understand.
I have no idea what that is.
But you got to look it up. But it's a dad and his son that love Costco, but then they started doing like TikTok dances, and then they like started adding characters to the group. It's tremendous. And the dad is a former independent wrestler. I mean, he's a big dude, athletic dude, like he's large.
Yeah.
He calls himself Big Justice. I mean, it's just amazing. The whole third, the kid is maybe Big Justice. And the dad is AJ.
You gotta get into
a Costco guy's hole, and you gotta go into the rabbit hole. You know, South Dakota State jokes aside, you gotta go get into the rabbit hole and find out about the Costco guys, because it's funny. I mean, it just is. It's super, super funny. You'll get a kick out of
it. It makes the events of that much better. Cause I mean, I thought it was hilarious too. You got one guy dancing by himself not even in the end zone. He's like outside of the end zone in the back of it. Then you got a full on brawl of two teams that just completely loathe each other going on right in front of him.
Yeah.
So they're protecting their quarterback.
This is terrible. This is terrible. Podcasting. Because, you know, people can't see what's on this screen.
Are you about to show me what this dance is from?
No. I'm going to show you the play.
Oh, so, yeah. Well, that's the...
That's what I'm talking about. So there's,
it's even hard, there's it's even shot hard for one. Me to watch it. It's even hard for me to see this. Okay, operating from my phone.
Here you go.
Is it possibly for blow that up?
Yeah, I blew it up. So the first shot from Heisman.
It's like right at the 15.
And Gronowski is getting in the way at the
15. He's trying to block him, and he gets launched.
And so here's shot two.
At the 5. He rolls. He goes backwards, rolls, gets up quickly, actually. And then, yeah.
But. If I'm the trailing offensive lineman, I'm throwing hands. That's what I'm taught to do.
Well, yeah, it's your quarterback. Even the first shot, you still throw hands because it's your quarterback. Even though Mark put himself in that scenario, it's your quarterback.
I was going to say, go stand by Jimmy.
Yeah.
Cody Heisman, God love him, is not catching Chase Mason in the open
field. No, he's gone. It's over. And two, it's like, Mark, for this team to win a national title, like you're needed.
You're pretty important.
Like we can, throw our shade, whatever, and have fun with it however much we want. But it's like, dude, you're kind of a critical component of this team being successful. Get out of the way.
Yep. As far as the run game for South Dakota State, reasonably successful, but you take Mason out of it. You know, they had 215 yards on the ground. Well, that's 80 of that belongs to Mason. Okay. And another 77 belongs to Gronowski. So 157 of the 215 rushing yards belonged to the QBs. Amar Johnson had 3.2 yards per attempt and forced 2 missed tackles. Angel Johnson had 3.4 yards attempt and forced 1 missed tackle. If we're going to go on the I Was Wrong tour, right back to the I Was Right tour, Angel and Amar just did not have an effect on this game.
They didn't get the edge and they didn't get the second level. It's exactly what we talked about.
Yep.
Recipe for success. And that was the one thing I was watching, because those are guys that if they get loose and confident, it could have been a long night. That obviously didn't happen. They both averaged – 3 point whatever yards per carry.
Yeah.
You can find yourself winning a football game against this team by doing that. You give up the big play. I fully anticipated that to happen. I thought more would happen, hence the score prediction. I think mine was you know, 34-27. I thought both teams would have more home run balls.
Yeah. That Bison defense, though, came to play. What a day for Griffin Wilde. And I mean that in kind of a negative way. A PFF college grade below 60, 60s average. He gets graded out at 58.6. Their average.
Did he have any drops, though?
He did not have a drop, but yeah. He basically got routed up by Logan Kopp. And the average – here's the crazy thing to me. You want to know the average depth of target for Griffin Wilde? So Griffin Wilde caught 5 balls on 6 targets for 32 yards, which is about as ho-hum as you can ho and hum. But the average depth of target for Griffin Wilde was 4.5 yards. Wow. That's crazy for a – not average depth of completed ball, average depth of target. Target. Throw it to him down the field.
I was going
to
say that to me is coaching. I mean, Gronowski to me, we've talked about this in previous pods and have gotten, things thrown back at us for it. Gronowski's good at winning you the football game. Gronowski's not going to go and shred you for 350 yards. And just dice you up. Is he capable of it? Yeah, but it's not a consistent thing. And for whatever reason, that tells me that that wasn't like part of their game plan offensively for South Dakota State was not to push the ball downfield in any capacity. And they didn't do that. And when they did that late in the game, it got picked off. Logan Kopp, you already mentioned it.
Yeah.
There could be a reason for that. I don't really know. Especially knowing what NDSU in at least like against like Colorado, but again, you don't have those type of receivers for South Dakota State, but like knowing what the secondary has given up for North Dakota State this season at times, like you would think you would want to try to exploit that, especially with a quarterback who is capable. So I don't know what the rhyme and reason for that is. But that seems very odd to me. That they wouldn't try to attempt that more. That if that's his average yards per target, that they wouldn't try to get the ball downfield.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. But just a hell of a game from the defense. I really thought the guys that came in, that had to come in, really showed out. I thought it was a really good game from Jalen Crumbie, who they just, I think, are forced to play now. Now, I don't know that you can play Crumbie and Givens together as they've both – they're both young kids who have been really learning free. That's why you did see Ryan Jones in the game, and they did not play Crumbie and Givens together. They don't play that position. But I thought Crumbie did a great job. I thought Ryan Jones was fine. I thought certainly Enoch Sivamana was awesome after coming in for Oscar Benson. And really the guy that I want to talk about too is Toby Anena, who you lose a Dylan Hendricks, and that's super important. And I think, the Bison would probably be pretty disappointed with 0 sacks on Gronowski. They had 15 pressures, and Toby Anena had 8 of them. I mean, they were moving him off his spots. And
he's not an easy guy to sack, though, either. So, like,
no, he's not. He's not. I mean? And the difference that I would say in the game is, yes, South Dakota State had a sack. South Dakota State had 7 pressures. They had fewer than half the pressures that NDSU did. Yes, one of them resulted in a sack, but Cam Miller had way more time to throw and was far less affected by what SDSU was doing up front than what was going on with Gronowski. You have to move off your spot 15 times and you're not going to have a great day.
Right. South Dakota State brought a good amount of pressure too, I thought. I mean, they
– yeah.
This just makes me so proud for Grant. I mean, Grant, him and I came in the same recruiting class. He graduated a year ahead of me because he didn't redshirt. And then my last season, we were roommates when he was a GA. And I just love the kid dearly. Obviously, he's a close friend. And I just – a game like this just makes me so proud. I mean, that's really – I mean, it's just – his Paul, guys into the game.
Take a bow after the game.
You give up 9 points against the best team in FCS, not as it stands now, obviously, because they won't be ranked number one. But the program and the team that has been the top of the mountain for FCS for the past 2 years. And he went and had a performance like this. I mean, doesn't surprise me. I said that earlier on this pod too, but just knowing the people and the minds behind it shocks me to no end, but it just makes me proud to see it executed in life.
No, they brought the funk. Franco, who wears number nine, Franco came on a rush four times. The corner Beanham, seven. He came on a rush once. Bach blitzed seven times. Graham Spaulding blitzed five times. excuse me. And the kid who wears zero, the linebacker that wears zero, he came on a blitz as well. So they brought guys plenty. I mean, plenty. Obviously, you get Bach, your Mike linebacker, on a pass rush seven times. You're bringing the heat because, you know, obviously his primary responsibility is coverage. And if he's pass rushing seven times, it only registers as a pass rush if NDSU actually throws the ball. So we're talking about 27 attempts for Cam. So almost a quarter of the time, more than a quarter of the time, if Cam was dropping back to pass, Bach was coming. And that doesn't say, and that's to say nothing of the of all the other blitzes that I just listed off from non-linemen. I mean, they were going to try to bring the smoke, and they were going to trust their defensive backs to get the job done. And largely, I think they did. Now, look, you get a Bryce Lance catch that wasn't. You get a long Chris Harris catch that wasn't. There is a lot of like game of inches stuff that has gone wrong over the last 4 years against the Rabbits that continued to go wrong tonight.
Yes.
Last night.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Cam's numbers could look even sweeter than they do. That throw to Bryce was so sick.
I know. And Raj's game winning touchdown. It was. Yeah.
Cam, by the way, leading all players in this game with an elite grade of 90.9, his best game of the season. That's how they felt about seven. I put together a little thing about my kind of final thought from last week's pod about how Cam had to go and win this thing. And not only did he go win the game by being the best player on the field, which is what I kind of implored him to do. Not that this has anything to do with me. It doesn't. But, you know, I said, Cam, go win the game. And he did not only by being the best player on the field, which he was, but he also did it by literally going and winning the game. Like, here is the ball on the 8-yard line, 9-yard line.
It was a 90-plus yard drive, yeah.
Yeah. The ball is now in your hands because we can't run it. We're not able to run it right now. And we're down two.
Go win. Use his legs to get a first down. I mean, it was his game. It was his that's what I put in that tweet, my immediate thoughts, that this was his stamp to his career because Brock Jensen's got Kansas State. Carson Wentz has South Dakota State. Second round of playoffs, my senior year. And Illinois State, senior year. Cam Miller now has South Dakota State 24. That's one that everyone can point to of.
Yep.
Here's why he's the guy. Not foregoing everything before that. There's a lot that has to precede that.
Right.
You don't just do that overnight. Yep. That's that shining moment that we knew he could do, and he did it. And that was just tremendous to watch him execute it because it was flawless.
110 passer rating, adjusted completion percentage of 75%. I mean, 41% of his passes were beyond the first down marker. 69% of the yardage that he generated were air yards, meaning not a check down merchant.
Right.
Meaning him making big ass throws in big time moments. And then, I mean, the only thing, like, to me that's even concerning about the whole thing, and concerning is a strong word, is this used to be – and look, man, they've won five in a row, so I get it. Beating the Rabbits used to be business as usual. buddy, this was not business as usual. You know, we used to make fun of SDSU when NDSU was clearly the better program and they'd come and win and then we'd go win the title or whatever. But like, oh, this was your Super Bowl. This kind of felt like our Super Bowl in the post game. And it's fine. Like, celebrate your victories. It's important. Those things are cool. Mm-hmm. Buddy, when I tell you that these boys were cranked up, the coaches, the players, like, that was a huge win, and they behaved as though if this was any other team but Murray State coming up, I'd have concern because we talked
about the emotional letdown.
Yeah, you talk about UND emptying the tank against us, SDSU in years past emptying the tank. I think we emptied the emotional. I don't think we emptied the play calling tank because we didn't really do anything gimmicky at all, but we emptied the emotional tank to finally put the rabbits down.
Yeah, but I think you had to. I mean, that's just where they're at right now as a program. And yep. I'm fully in agreement with you. I'm like, okay, it used to be flipped. This was their Super Bowl. Yep. They'd win, celebrate. We'd beat them in the playoffs. Fine.
Yeah.
To get things, quote unquote, fully back. You know, the we're back and all that. You had to win this game.
To go full Texas and tell everybody that you we're did. Back.
Which...
Hopefully, we're more back in Texas.
I was just saying, full Texas. Let's.
Yeah.
I love the analogy, but I don't want to equate us to them. But my point is that they haven't lost an FCS game in over 2 years.
Yeah.
They've been ranked number one ever since they beat NDSU. The last time 1-2 played, it was in the Fargo Dome.
Yeah.
And the last time NDSU has beat them, COVID never existed.
Yeah, a little bit different world.
They also beat us at what we do best, which is win national titles.
Yeah.
In Frisco. 9-0 all time in Frisco until that fateful day happened in 2023. Yep. And I went because I didn't fully expect South Dakota State to win that game, by the way, just being real. But I couldn't stand the thought of not being there if that didn't happen in North Dakota State won that game. So I was willing to risk it. And so when those things happen, number one, it makes the rivalry that much better. You've got two teams that clearly know they are the reason FCS even gets notoriety anymore. Everyone else is gone. So it's like this game matters so much more now for this level of football. And when you haven't done it in almost half a decade of beating them, when you do it, it's going to warrant that response. Now, this is something I was planning on if I was going to be able to make it for like the Murray pod was talk about that exact topic. Everything you do want to go and accomplish now, it's all in front of you. The road doesn't end after this win. It's just an easier path because now you'll probably have more home playoff games, theoretically. But that's what that provided for you, is the opportunity to go and accomplish your goals through a much easier path than maybe having to go to Brookings to get to Frisco.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and the funny thing.
Yeah, there's more season to be had. Who knows what they do next week?
Yeah. I'm going to be really, I tell you what, man. I am going to really, really be paying attention to SDSU USD because, when I say top heavy, I'm starting to wonder if this isn't like a two-team subdivision, which is unfortunate.
Very unfortunate.
And like, I think I said something along the line of like, can any non-Dakota school even beat a Dakota team at the FCS level right now?
It hasn't. I mean, the only time it's happened is when Montana State beat SDSU in 2021, and they weren't there yet. They were on their way.
I'm talking about this season, though. Like right now.
Yeah, this season. Oh.
Right now, UND. Let me look at their schedule just so I'm correct. I'm 95% sure that I am. UND's 5-2. Those two losses are to Iowa State and NDSU. UND has not been beaten by a non-Dakota FCS school. The same, I believe, holds true for USD. I don't think USD doesn't have an FCS loss, right?
They lost to, like, Wisconsin or something.
Right.
That's it.
So, South Dakota State, their only loss is to
North Dakota State.
NDSU doesn't have an FCS loss. Mm-hmm. Can anybody in the FCS beat UND, SDSU, North Dakota State, or USD?
I think the only one is Montana State. I think the only one is Montana State, but physically, do they match up? And the only reason I even say they have a chance is because I love Brent Vegan. I love that man. I think he's capable. He knows what it takes. And I think that's the one thing that they got. And if he wasn't coaching, would they be able to do that?
Right.
I mean, I love Shep too. I mean, Shep's there. But Montana, I don't think Montana can.
Montana's not very good.
Not this year.
Yeah.
Northern Iowa is bad. They're going to play hard, but they're bad. They're just bad at football.
Buddy.
That's a whole other thing.
It might be time. I got told that Farley's – well, no, he did it publicly. Jay Elson tweeted at me. Shout out to Jay. He almost hopped on the pot. He had to put the kids to bed. I was going to surprise you with Jay's presence.
I miss Jay. Hello, Jay.
Yeah. In the press conference, he was sitting next to Colbeck, and I was like, Jay, you're one of my top two favorite bald people in the front row. That joke went over like a lead balloon. Jeff didn't think it was very funny. But he said that, like, Farley's contract is hard to get out of. So wasn't he the AD for a minute, though? Like, was Farley not the interim AD for a second?
I feel like you saying that, it brings up that I should know something and that feels right. I don't recall anything.
Anyway, they have a new athletic director, but it sounds like his deal's not easy to get out of. He's been the coach at UNI for 24 years.
Yeah, he's got zero national championships. I mean, what? He's been once.
Huh. That's mean.
They're facts.
Yeah. I got you.
And he's now coaching in the era of FCS where it's not FCS of yesteryear.
Yeah.
FCS peaked in 2012, in my opinion, in terms of like depth.
So Farley, since 11, so since NDSU started actually, by the way, we're on minute 47. Remember when we didn't have a script and we're like, oh, we'll bang out 25 minutes and it'll be fine?
I knew for sure we'd go on. I'm
at 47.
Kids are sleeping, so I'm good to go.
Farley is about to be 83-67 since 2011, which
that's not bad. I mean, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, it is. I mean, well, it depends. I tell you what, Trev, it depends on what the standards of your program are, because 83-67 is what on a 11 game schedule. 7-4, that's being generous. Between 7-4 and 6-5,
yeah,
buddy. If you went 6-5 2 years in a row at NDSU, you would be on the unemployment line.
Yeah, I wouldn't have patience for it as a player. No way.
Same thing in Brookings. If Jimmy goes 6-5 the next 2 years,
well, especially post Stig. I mean, Stig was staying as long as he wanted, but yeah,
right. But what I'm saying, like, they won't. The resource gap is too wide they're not, now. But I mean, if Jimmy Rogers went 6-5 for the next 2 years, he'd be out of there.
Jimmy seems like the type of guy that would fire himself if he did that. Like, he loves that program. Like, you can tell he loves that program. He played there. Like, he would be like, I'm not the guy for the job. He seems like he would do that. And that's,
tell you what,
we're not saying that's going to happen. We're just,
Jimmy's one of those dudes that I think might hate us more than he loves South Dakota State.
Probably.
Jimmy does not care for NDSU. I'll just put it to you that way. Respect, well, sure. Respect for Polisek, but he had some quotes about, like, he's never touched the rock because his favorite thing was watching us walk off the field knowing that we'd lost. Like, he it's real for Jimmy Rogers. It's real, which I respect that level of pettiness.
It makes a rivalry.
That yeah, I respect great. I respect that level of pettiness and anger. I like that a lot. Last thing I'll say is both teams, and look, whatever, like, it's going to happen. Although I said Rogers at the end, Jimmy Rogers was like, I've got the Packer Report stuff behind me. So I say Rogers, people think I'm talking about Aaron. Jimmy Rogers goes,
Aaron play.
Yeah. Jimmy Rogers goes, you know, whether it's back up here or us hosting it in Brookings, we'll see these guys in December. I'm like, Jimmy, what do you think is going to happen? how do you think that game is going to be in Brookings, dog?
Yeah, this is home playoff field at stake here. Right. I mean, granted, crazy stuff can happen.
I don't know, man. I think even if NDSU does somehow hunt down a loss, I don't think it.
Well, you got the head-to-head because
right.
Then you tie for the conference. You got the head-for-head, the head-to-head. You got the auto bid in the Valley, which holds weight, and
I think the only loss that's even on the menu is in Verm. And I don't think they're going to lose that game, but I think that's the only loss that's even
at least right now. Menu. I mean, Missouri State would be the other one that you kind of point to, but Murray State's really bad.
Not at home.
Oh, that's at home.
Yeah, not at home.
Okay, okay. Oh yeah, because Murray's on the road.
Right.
So yeah, because Murray's on the road, and then it's home against Northern Iowa.
So it's two of each left. You've got Murray on the road. You've got USD on the road. You've got
UNI
at home. You've got Missouri State at home, and obviously, so then to me, Murray State, bye week UNA, yeah,
with
right.
Bye week. So yeah,
my humble opinion: Murray State, UNI, and Missouri State, sorry, Murray and Missouri State. I think the hay is already in the barn. Now I'm going to shut my phone off. I don't want to hear nothing from no coaches. But I think the hay is probably already in the barn for those three games. Okay.
Yeah.
At Verm is the only question. But in my opinion, SDSU runs the table. We lose in Verm. It's still – I think you still seed NDSU – above because
well, you have head-to-head. I mean, well, you don't have to, but they likely would because of the head-to-head.
Right, because of the head-to-head.
They would get the auto bid.
Yeah.
And the auto bids, you know, that doesn't mean you get a higher seed, but the likelihood, especially knowing how the Valley shakes out, it's the likelihood is very high.
Right.
So I just hope the committee does it right, man. I mean, I put that out there about them being on opposite brackets and got a couple responses about the committee in Montana State and all that. I just Montana State going undefeated versus one loss to North Dakota State versus what Colorado, they were 4 yards short of beating Colorado, who is proving me way wrong of where they would end up this season.
Yeah.
And that's going to hold weight. It has to.
That'll
be an interesting development. Overall, but it, because here's the thing, you put NDSU 1, Montana State 2, South Dakota State 3. Okay, now they're in opposite brackets.
Right, exactly. That's my point. Unless the committee goes absolutely rogue and puts this Montana State team that is not as good as either NDSU or South Dakota State, they're just not, and puts them 1, then you're safe. Then you literally won't. You can't see SDSU until Texas.
Because if they're 2 and 3 would be on the same side. 1 versus 4 is the semis. The matchup is 1-4 in the semis. 2 versus 3. So
that's
Montana State goes 1.
What I'm saying is, if NDSU wins out, they should be the 1.
And
therefore, by being the 1, they should be exempt from any concern related to playing the 2 or the 3. Which,
yes.
So if you're going to call it a 3-team subdivision, which we kind of have at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the clear number 1 in our minds, and I think in reality, is NDSU. So whether it's just, let's just say NDSU, SDSU, and Montana State all win out, which is probably the most likely scenario, though it is college football, stuff happens. Mm-hmm. Well, then I think more than likely you got NDSU 1, Montana State 2, South Dakota State 3. So SDSU will have to go out to Bozeman and win that game to come back to Frisco. But I think then NDSU walks through the bracket and goes back to Texas.
With how top heavy it is
here on October 20th.
With how top heavy it is right now.
Right.
Right, because this is the matchup that FCS needs. I was just going to say, and you've said it. I said it earlier. This is the matchup FCS needs in Frisco. For the whole thing. I mean, for ratings, for relevancy of the subdivision, for who knows what that's going to be long term. Obviously, we're very public about how we feel about it, about NDSU going FBS. It's something we highly desire.
I mean, personally, I'd be fine if they lost that game in Bozeman and NDSU beat Montana State by 30 in Frisco again. But, hey, it's just, you know, that's
just your personal preferences. Yeah,
right. All right, brother. My drink is empty. The Bison have the marker. It's 9:30 at night, which means it's 10:30 at night for you.
Yep.
I think we wrap it up. Appreciate you, Geb, for taking the time. Thank all you guys for listening. Have a wonderful rest of the week. We will return. I'll be at the we'll have lots of stuff because I'll be at the NDSU. Shout out, credit to Dave Richmond, by the way, for scheduling MSUM. Wednesday night exhibition. I'm gonna see if there's a NCAA Division II men's basketball preseason poll.
Hasn't he been pretty vocal that he would never do? I mean, it's an exhibition, so it doesn't count, but.
Oh, shoot. All right. So it's just last year's. So MSUM finished at 11 in D2 last year. Mm-hmm. They were 24-5. But yeah, it's going down. So we'll have everything from MSUM versus NDSU. Again, exhibition, no exhibition. That's a good program across the river there. And I'm excited to watch this new basketball crew. And then, of course, preview the game down in Murray State. Have a great – go ahead.
So I'm looking at the schedule. They play Jamestown. Is that a real game then? It doesn't say exhibition below it.
Yeah. They've done stuff like that. It's tough for them to get games. Like – they played that one game that was like 100-25 was
that. Oh my gosh. The Bishop Gorman College.
You think you're trying to say Bishop Sycamore, but yeah,
Gorman's the high school in Nevada. Yeah.
The whatever Christian University of Wisconsin that just got run, that game technically counted. So I would guess that the Jamestown is a non D1 official game, which unfortunately it's just hard to it's getting, obviously with only Butler on the schedule, it's getting harder and harder to schedule the high majors because the high major coaches with the transfer portal don't know what their roster is going to look like. And if you're going to have a down year and you don't know if you're going to have a down year, you don't want to schedule a home loss to the Bison. So yeah, that Monday, November 4th against Jamestown's a real game, as obviously is Thursday, November 7th versus Illinois State at home. And by the way, that's the return, speaking of Jamestown, of the Jamestown kid, Bowden Skunberg. Bowden taking his final year to play at Illinois State. So, but yeah, this week we'll have everything from the MSU Moorhead exhibition game, and we will have the Murray State preview. Let me start this all over again. Geb, thank you so much for your time. Folks, thank you so much for listening. Have a great week, everybody. Go Bison.